How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Lee Harvey Oswald's alleged trip to Mexico City in late September of 1963 is one of the cloudiest and most misunderstood areas of JFK assassination research. In this episode, we look back on the major questions and the corresponding evidence when it comes to Oswald in Mexico City. At the conclusion of this episode, we'll be joined for a wide-ranging discussion by Dr. John Newman, a retired Army intelligence major who's currently a professor at James Madison University. Dr. Newman will give us his take on Mexico City, as well as other matters that relate to Oswald's potential connection to the CIA. You'll definitely want to stick around for Dr. Newman's episode, because in addition to Mexico City, there's a major revelation that we'll cover when it comes to whether Oswald was a false defector to the Soviet Union.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton.
Welcome to Solving JFK. This is a recap and rebuttals episode. Usually when we do recap and rebuttals, I'm joined by a guest who will respond to each issue as I go through them. But we decided to change the format up a bit for this one because we wanted to have more of a broad, open-ended conversation with our guest this week, Dr. John Newman. So please do stick around for the second part of this episode at the conclusion of the recap and rebuttals. You definitely will not want to miss it. Let's go ahead and get into it. The first big question when it comes to Oswald and Mexico City is whether Lee Harvey Oswald ever even traveled to Mexico City at all. The Warren Report says that Oswald departed from New Orleans around noon on Wednesday, September 25th, and arrived in Mexico City at about 10 a.m. on Friday, September 27th. Now, there is some evidence that supports Oswald going to Mexico City. First, we have someone who claimed to be Oswald in Houston on Wednesday, September 25th, who calls the home of Horace and Estelle Twyford. Horace Twyford had sent Oswald a leftist newspaper, and Oswald wanted to know how he got his name. But Horace wasn't home, so he talked to his wife, Estelle, and left a message for Horace. Estelle remembered this man saying that he was about to fly down to Mexico. This interaction between Oswald and Estelle Twyford suggests that the man claiming to be Oswald would have had access to Oswald's P.O. box because he would have to know about the mail that Oswald was getting. Or it really was Oswald. The next thing supporting Oswald going to Mexico City is a statement from E.P. Hammett from Continental Trailways. He says that Oswald bought a bus ticket from Houston to Laredo and departed early on Thursday morning. Hammett said Oswald was wearing a brown and white pullover sweater, white dungarees, and white canvas shoes. Now, Marina said that Oswald didn't own any of those clothes, and none of them were found in his possession. But there are things much stranger than losing your clothes that have happened. Still, it's worth noting, Oswald never had any of those clothes that he was allegedly seen with. There are multiple people who claim to have met Oswald on the bus in Mexico. This is the third fact that really supports Oswald traveling to Mexico City. We have Merrill and John McFarland, who say that Oswald mentioned being in New Orleans, and he mentioned Fair Play for Cuba Committee, and they identified the Oswald from TV after the Kennedy assassination as the same person that they saw on the bus. The counterpoint to that, to some extent, is that the American consul in Nuevo Laredo said that Oswald's name was not on the list of people who entered Mexico from the United States on September 26th. But Merrill and John McFarland, who said that they saw Oswald on the bus, were on that list. Pamela Mumford and Patricia Winston were two friends from Australia who were on the bus traveling from Monterrey to Mexico City. They are sure that they saw Oswald because he showed them a Russian passport stamp and he said that he had been in the Marines in Japan. On the other hand, John Bowen, the man who was sitting next to the man who Mumford and Winston said was Oswald, claimed that Oswald was not the man that he sat next to because the man that he sat next to had dark hair. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag on the bus witnesses. In addition to those things, there's an FM8 tourist card that shows Oswald entering Mexico and him being admitted to Nuevo Laredo on Thursday, September 26th. Fairly strong evidence. There's also a baggage list for the bus ride that Oswald was supposedly on, which has the name Oswald with a J at the end. But according to multiple witnesses, the ladies on the bus and the people at the hotel, Oswald only had one bag, which he kept with him when he was in Mexico. The baggage list was provided to the FBI on December 6th, 1963. So that's the evidence that supports Oswald being in Mexico City. There is evidence against Oswald ever going to Mexico City, however. In addition to the counterpoints mentioned so far regarding the evidence that supports him going to Mexico City, the primary argument that the real Oswald was not in Mexico City is due to four sightings of him in Texas at the same time when he's supposed to be in Mexico. First, we have on September 25th, Lee Danley of the Selective Service Department that's in Austin says that Oswald visited her to clear up his discharge from the Marines. She identified him as the same Lee Harvey Oswald from TV, although she says that he called himself Harvey. Now, we know that Oswald had this issue with his discharge from the Marines. So if this is not Oswald, it is somebody impersonating him very specifically. In Dallas on September 25th or September 26th, we have Henry McCluskey from the Texas Employment Commission who says that he interviewed Oswald about getting his unemployment benefits paid in Texas. You may remember that Oswald was on unemployment in Louisiana, so he's basically moving from Louisiana to Texas. He's still trying to get those unemployment benefits. That's what this visit is about. The Interstate Claims Card from the Texas Employment Commission was in the Warren Report volumes, but the date of Oswald's visit was apparently intentionally cut out. You look at the document and it's not a straight line. It's a line that kind of goes up and over, and it's some interesting cutting, and it leaves you to wonder, why did they do that? Especially when the date is so important. They just give you this little sliver of a document. It does not really inspire confidence. But so far, Selective Service in Austin, Texas Employment Commission in Dallas, during times when Oswald is supposed to be in Mexico. And then the third thing, Oswald goes to see his future landlady, Gladys Johnson, who's the owner of 1026 North Beckley Avenue. And she says that Oswald came to visit her asking about a room 3 weeks before he eventually actually moved in. He moved in on October 14th. So 3 weeks from that date would be September 23rd. Now, we know that Oswald did not leave New Orleans until September 25th because the check that he cashed at the Winn-Dixie in New Orleans was on that day. So the story from Gladys Johnson is less reliable than the definitive dates that Henry McCluskey and Lee Danley had. Nonetheless, it's something. Finally, there's the big story of Sylvia Odio, which is confirmed by her sister, Annie Odio. And she claims that Oswald and two Cubans came to visit her. They were asking about raising money for JOR, the Manolo Rey-led anti-Castro organization. And this one's interesting because one of the men, Leopoldo, really went out of his way to tell her that Leon Oswald was crazy and that he was a good shot and that he had been in the Marines and that he wanted to help the anti-Castro cause. And Leopoldo mentioned Oswald's name twice. He even called her back the next day to talk to her about Oswald. This Odio story is even more compelling when we look at the FBI reports that were done at the last minute, right before the Warren Report came out, trying to confirm who exactly was at Odio's house. Now, the FBI said it was Lauren Hall, Lawrence Howard, and William Seymour. But after the Warren Report was already released, after it came out, the FBI later followed up with all three of these men, and they all denied the story. And Lauren Hall, who supposedly is the first one who told this story to the FBI, says that he never said any of it, and the FBI fabricated the whole story. So in conclusion on this question of did Oswald ever go to Mexico City, there's a lot of conflicting evidence here. Before I talked to Dr. Newman, I was leaning towards the idea that Oswald never went to Mexico City at all, because it seemed like it was Oswald in Texas, and because there are so many counterpoints to the evidence for him being present on the way to Mexico City. At this point, my conclusion is that I do not know whether Oswald went to Mexico City or not. But I do know that either Oswald did not go to Mexico City, and that was him in Texas, or someone's going out of their way to impersonate him in Texas while the real Oswald is in Mexico City. I can't imagine looking at the four stories we just noted above with Oswald in Texas and going, oh, that's nothing, I'm just going to forget it. You know, hey, it's a weird coincidence. This impersonation of Oswald, whether it was in Mexico City or whether it was in Texas, points to a larger conspiracy at play with someone trying to make it look like Oswald was in Texas at the time when the Warren Report says he was in Mexico City. The second big issue we're going to look at today, what can we learn from the apparent movements of the man who claimed to be Oswald? Now, I'm going to say Oswald going forward just to make it easy, but I want you to know that I don't know if this really is Oswald or if it's an imposter. This is who we're told is Oswald. Okay. So on the Friday morning, an unknown man who the CIA later identified as Oswald called the Soviet military attaché speaking Spanish. According to Dr. Newman, this man was not Oswald and was also not an Oswald imposter. He was just some random third person who was mistakenly labeled as being involved in this incident. And that would make sense given that he was speaking Spanish, and Oswald wasn't really known to speak Spanish. Around noon on Friday, an unknown man appeared at the Cuban consulate and spoke exclusively in English to Sylvia Duran. He asked Duran for a transit visa to the Soviet Union through Cuba, and Duran told him that he needed to have photos for the application and he needed to have a visa from the Soviet Union for her to approve that. Now, it's worth noting that Oswald already had the ability to go to the Soviet Union in the same way he had gone before, through Helsinki. But he did the only thing he was not allowed to do, it was stamped right there on the passport, which was to try to go through Cuba to the Soviet Union, which he was expressly not allowed to do. So this idea that Oswald's endgame was going to the Soviet Union, if you believe that, you have to explain why wouldn't he just go then? Is he dumb or what? I mean, or is there some reason he would go to Mexico City, right? So that's one issue that does need to be addressed. So Friday around 12:30, after he's told by Sylvia Duran that, you know, he needs photos and he needs to have the Soviet Union's approval, Oswald visits the Soviet consulate to get a visa, but they tell him that it's going to take 4 months to approve and it needs to be processed in Washington, D.C. Oswald then throws a fit and he leaves the consulate. Importantly, he never even filled out any paperwork at all to get the ball rolling on his job application. About an hour later, around 1:25 on Friday, when Oswald was either still inside the Soviet consulate or he had just left after throwing a fit, a man who the CIA says was Oswald called the Soviet consulate and asked to speak to the consul. He was told to call back the next day between 4 or 5, and that conversation was, again, entirely in Spanish, which, as far as we know, Oswald did not speak. Later that afternoon, Oswald came back to the Cuban consulate with photos for the application, but he was told that he still needed to have the approval from the Soviet Union to get an in-transit visa to Cuba. As we've seen, it was going to take Oswald at least 4 months to get this approval if he could have gotten it. The next day, on Saturday, officials at the Soviet consulate say that Oswald showed up at 9:30 on Saturday morning when the consulate was closed to the public, and the employees happened to be there getting ready for their weekly Saturday morning volleyball game. Oswald begged to be let in and said that he was being persecuted in the U.S., but the officials there said that he still needed to apply in Washington, D.C., and that it would take 4 months. Oswald still, on his second visit to the Soviet consulate, does not fill out an application. So after Oswald visits the Soviet consulate and delays their morning volleyball game, at a time when the Soviet and Cuban embassies were both closed for business to the public, there's a CIA transcript that says that Sylvia Odio called from the Cuban consulate to the Soviet consulate on behalf of Oswald and put him on the phone. And when she did, he spoke hardly recognizable, terrible Russian. But Sylvia Duran and the two other consuls at the Cuban consulate confirmed that they were closed on Saturdays. And Nechi Parenko of the Soviet consulate confirmed that the switchboard was closed on Saturday morning, and it is not possible that a call could have gone through. When we look at the CIA transcript of this Saturday morning phone call, which may or may not have ever happened, it says that Oswald said to the Soviet embassy, quote, "I was just at your embassy and they took my address. I did not know it then. I went to the Cuban embassy to ask for my address because they have it." Like we talked about, you know, when we covered this previously, this is total nonsense talk. Oswald went to the Soviet embassy to get their address because he didn't have it before, and he went to the Cuban embassy because they have it. Well, how'd they get it? From him, right? So he doesn't know his address? It doesn't make any sense. And he had just been there that morning talking to them, and he still didn't fill out the application. So when you follow the official story, it doesn't stand on its own to make sense, all right? So that doesn't mean that we know whether Oswald was there or not. Again, we do know he was being impersonated. Okay, Tuesday, around 10:45 a.m., a man who said his name was Lee Oswald spoke in English on the phone to the Soviet consulate. This is the only call with Oswald's name in the transcript. And the challenge here is that Oswald boarded a bus back to the U.S. at 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday morning. And there was nothing for Oswald to follow up on in the first place because he never submitted an application. So in conclusion on these visits to the Soviet and Cuban consulates, if Oswald really was present in Mexico City, these interactions and phone calls don't make any sense, especially the fact that he never filled out an application for the Soviet visa, but then he kept on following up on it. We also have the disputed Saturday phone call and the Tuesday call while Oswald was on the bus. These contacts with the Cubans and Soviets are still cloudy and very disputed. But the one thing that's clear is that if Oswald just wanted to go to the Soviet Union, he could have done that already without any additional approvals. And if he really wanted to go to the Soviet Union through Cuba, he should have at least filled out the application to get the ball rolling, given that he was told it was a 4-month wait. Unless Oswald traveling to Cuba and then to the Soviet Union wasn't really the plan. And the plan was to make it look like that's what he was going to do. And it needed to be done in a certain amount of time that was shorter than 4 months. If that's the case, then Oswald's behavior would make sense. The third issue we're going to look at, why are there no photos or tape recordings of Oswald in Mexico City? So let's look at photos first. We know that there were multiple cameras pointing at the Soviet and Cuban consulates. Still, there are no photos of Oswald visiting those places. Looking at the Soviet consulate first, the CIA took 16 pictures on Friday, September 27th at the Soviet consulate. But the last one they took was at 11:46 a.m., just minutes before Oswald visited. There were other cameras at the Soviet consulate, but the CIA destroyed those photos and all of the notes about those photos. And the CIA does say that there was a photo of Oswald there. They just happened to destroy it. However, they are on the record saying, no, we did see a picture of Oswald, but we don't have it for you. But we do have all these other pictures from right before Oswald visited. So then looking at the Cuban consulate, when we look at photos, CIA officer David Atlee Phillips told the HSCA under oath that none of the cameras were working at the time Oswald was there at the Cuban consulate, and that the automatic pulse camera, the one that was motion detected, was not installed until December of 1963. But an internal CIA dispatch says that the automatic pulse camera outside the Cuban consulate wasn't only installed before Oswald's visit, it was in good working order as of Thursday, September 26th. This means that David Atlee Phillips perjured himself in front of the HSCA. HSCA investigators determined that 10 feet of film was taken from one of the CIA cameras and developed, and that was from the time that Oswald would have been visiting the Cuban consulate. Those photos have since disappeared. CIA in Mexico City had 5 packages of Cuban consulate photos that were taken during the time when Oswald was there in Mexico City. They send these 5 packages back to Langley, and years later, when the HSCA wants to see this material, the CIA was not able to locate the 5 packages of photos from the time Oswald was there. Also, Eusebio Askew provided images of the man who claimed to be Oswald that were taken inside of the Cuban consulate to a CBS reporter, Ed Rabel. And those photos look nothing like Oswald. For me, Eusebio Askew's photos are dispositive of the fact that Oswald was impersonated by someone, unless you believe Eusebio Askew is just completely lying, which I suppose you have to entertain. Nevertheless, that's a big one, the fact that he provided this image of this other person who looks nothing like Oswald. Finally, Wynn Scott, the CIA Mexico City station chief, said in his memoirs, his autobiography that he was working on, that photos existed of Oswald that were taken at the Soviet and Cuban consulates. So, you know, these photos existed, they were there, but they're all gone now. And so, you know, things happen. This is a big inference split point. You know, I think some people would look at this and they would say, yeah, that's bad. It does look bad for the CIA, you know, to be missing all of these things. It looks really bad. And, you know, David Atlee Phillips is caught in a lie about whether or not they had this, you know, automatic pulse camera at a certain time. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily prove anything, but, you know, it's, for me, the inference I would make here is that it looks like the CIA is trying to hide something. And the question is, were they hiding photos of a man who was not Oswald, since that would show that he was impersonated? Or were they hiding photos of the real Oswald internally so that he could not be identified too early to be removed from the parade route? I think that's another possibility. Those seem like probably the 2 most likely reasons for any CIA skullduggery around these surveillance images. But again, maybe it's possible they're telling the truth, but just go back through all the things I just said and see if you can swallow that. You know, if you can, then You have a different inference generation mechanism than I do, and that's okay. We can keep talking about it and agree to disagree. All right.
88% of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The next issue, the tapes. So we talked about photos. Now let's talk about audio tapes. The CIA had recording devices inside the Cuban and Soviet consulates, as well as telephone lines that were tapped. We know that at least one conversation between Oswald and the Soviets was recorded because after President Kennedy was assassinated, FBI agents listened to it. And the agents sat in on Oswald's interrogation at the Dallas Police Department and then listened to the tape and saw the photos. Those agents who saw the photo, listened to the tape in Mexico City, and then were there with Oswald said that the man on the tape and in the pictures was not the same person. When FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover was notified about this, he called President Johnson on November 23rd, the day after the assassination. That phone call, which was recorded and was partially transcribed, has gone missing. The whole recording is missing. And it's not just missing, it's actively deleted. So someone intentionally deleted it. But we do have part of the transcript. Now, the fact of someone intentionally deleting it, again, do you see how the nefariousness is potentially piling up? You can choose to ignore that, I suppose, you know, but it's there. Okay. But anyway, so we do have a transcript. So Johnson asks Hoover, you know, what's going on with the Mexico City angle? And Hoover tells Johnson that the picture and the tape do not correspond to this man's voice, nor to his appearance. In other words, it appears that there is a second person who was at the Soviet embassy down there. That's huge. So LBJ is telling Hoover that you've got Oswald at the Soviet embassy. That's a big thing. And oh, by the way, it's not Oswald. It's someone impersonating Oswald. Hoover followed up his call with a 5-page memo to President Johnson that confirmed everything he had told him in the call. He also wrote a similar memo to the head of Secret Service. The CIA disputes Hoover's cover story because they say that they had already erased the tapes before the assassination, and there's no way the FBI agents possibly could have heard them because the tapes had been erased. But Warren Commission attorneys David Slauson and William Coleman both said that they listened to the tapes when they traveled to Mexico City in 1964. Which proves that the CIA was caught in a lie once again. Years later, when Station Chief Winston Scott died, James Angleton retrieved the contents of Scott's safe before he was buried. Scott's widow said that her husband had told her that he had a tape of Lee Harvey Oswald on vinyl. Now, incidentally, a CIA whistleblower recently came forward to journalist Jefferson Morley and said that they saw what appeared to be a VHS-style case that said Lee Oswald in Mexico, 1963. Now, could that be the missing tape from when Scott's safe? I don't know. That's a lot of speculation. We really don't know. but interesting to see that data point as well. My conclusion here is that just like with the photos, we got some shady things potentially happening with the tapes. You have to choose what's more credible. It's the CIA versus J. Edgar Hoover, three FBI agents, Winston Scott, the CIA's station chief, and two Warren Commission attorneys, Slauson and Coleman. For me, the weight of the evidence is clearly against the CIA's argument. I believe that at least one tape existed and was either destroyed or is now sitting at a secure facility in a nondescript building somewhere, waiting for the American people to have the courage to demand that its elected officials enforce the JFK Records Act. Okay. Sorry, I'm on my soapbox, but you know, you've listened to the JFK Records Act episode. You know, if you have, then you'll know that we had this impotent law and it's being flagrantly violated. So they can, you know, they're allowed to keep the records classified if they meet certain requirements, but they're not meeting those requirements. They're not providing identification aids. They don't have a searchable identification aid database. And, you know, they unilaterally changed the law, and it appears that the courts will do nothing. So I want you to know that if you care about this, you need to make your voice heard. Your elected officials are not helping you. They're not doing anything for you. Okay, moving on. Number four, why did the CIA bifurcate Oswald's file? Okay, so this is a really, really big one. Oswald attempted to defect to the Soviets and then threatened to share his U-2 spy plane secrets. And then he came home and he got heavily involved with Fair Play for Cuba in New Orleans. Then he goes to Mexico City and he meets with the head of assassinations for the Western Hemisphere for the KGB, Kostikov, in Mexico City after also visiting the Cuban consulate, by the way. How could this incident with the Soviets and the Cubans in Mexico City not trigger a warning internally about Oswald? Think about that. I mean, you've got this guy who it's all of the warning signs you could ever want. And, you know, he went over there. He was going to defect. He's going to share all these secrets. He comes back and now he's here. He is being all communist acting again with the Fair Play for Cuba committee. Now he's meeting with the head of assassinations. Wow. With the KGB. So, you know, we would think, let's assume this is all real. It's a real Oswald. He's a lone nut. Let's assume all that. What a colossal failure by the intelligence agencies. If everything they're saying is true, what a nightmare failure, right? So that's another piece of it to consider. But as we've discussed, I don't believe everything that they're saying is true. And the reason, by the way, that the CIA was not able to figure out that, you know, this Oswald character had a history is because the CIA bifurcated Oswald's files. There's two separate files, okay? So let's talk about that. We'll also talk about what the FBI did. On September 23rd, 1963, the CIA begins to bifurcate Oswald's file. There were two separate files created for him. The one that was available to anyone within the CIA who was asking about Oswald, which showed that Oswald was still in the Soviet Union as far as they knew, and it was dated 1962 was the last date of the most recent report, and then another file that contained FBI reports from Oswald's time in New Orleans that talked about his activities with Fair Play for Cuba Committee and his arrest. So here's why this matters. When John Witten, who was the CIA HQ liaison to the Mexico City station, is asked about Oswald by the Mexico City station, Witten sends the file that he has access to, which is the generic file that shows that Oswald's still in the Soviet Union and as of, you know, 1962. He did not tell them anything about Fair Play for Cuba or Oswald's arrest or anything that had or anything that had happened in 1963. So the higher ups at the CIA did not provide all the information about Oswald when they were asked. And the big question is, what reason would they have to do that? When we talk to Dr. Newman, we will do a deep dive on this subject, and he's got some very interesting stories to share. On top of the CIA document split, you know, the two different files the CIA had. There's also an FBI flash warning that was canceled by a man named Marvin Geesling. So what that would have done is raised Oswald's profile to make it clear that, you know, if this guy's on the parade route, you got to pull him because he's a threat. But because that flash warning was canceled, the FBI was never aware of Oswald and no one thought to pull him from the parade route. What's suspicious about this to me is that nobody ever asked Marvin Geesling why he did that. It's a big blank in the record. We have no idea. So, you know, it would help if we had a clue. Geesling was disciplined by J. Edgar Hoover for this, but a lot of folks in the FBI were. So we'll talk more about both of these topics when we talk to Dr. Newman here in just a bit. My conclusion on the issue of the bifurcation of Oswald's file is that the only inference I can make is that the CIA was separating his file and the FBI was turning off the flash because Oswald was not a normal case. He was not just some standard crazy Marxist that, by the way, all of these intelligence agencies are supposed to be there to guard against. Okay. So if you believe that Oswald acted alone, it's the most catastrophic intelligence failure ever. Okay. I mean, you could bring up 9/11, whatever. The point is, up to this point, it's just a massive problem. Okay. So it should shake your faith in these institutions if you believe the official story. If you don't believe the official story, you've got to say that these institutions are much more competent, although they're terrifying. So you can take your pick, negligence or terror. Anyway, when we combine this information about you know, the bifurcated CIA file and turning the FBI flash off with later statements that were made by Jane Roman to Dr. Newman and to Jefferson Morley, she said that the bifurcation of Oswald's file meant that the CIA had, quote, a keen interest in Oswald held very closely on a need-to-know basis. Now, this flies directly in the face of the CIA's contention that it had no interest at all in Oswald. The CIA was interested in Oswald. Why the CIA lied about it and the exact nature of that interest remains an open question. And finally, issue number 5. How does the saga of Oswald in Mexico City fit into the big picture of the JFK assassination? We know that J. Edgar Hoover warned Lyndon Johnson about Oswald visiting the Soviet embassy, but he also told Johnson that there was a second person at the Soviet embassy pretending to be Oswald. Now, we know from recorded phone calls that President Johnson used what Hoover told him about a little incident in Mexico City to convince Earl Warren and Richard Russell to serve on the Warren Commission. The problem is that when Johnson told Warren and Russell about Oswald visiting the Soviet embassy, he left out the headline that Hoover told him, which is that there was a second person down there impersonating Oswald, which obviously undercuts the point of, hey, he's meeting with the Soviets, except for it's not him. That's kind of important. Ultimately, the point of Mexico City, the whole point of the saga there, depends on whether you believe Oswald acted alone to kill President Kennedy. For Warren Report defenders, Mexico City shows just how committed Oswald was to traveling to Cuba, and it leaves open the door that Oswald really was an agent of the Soviets or the Cubans, since he spoke with them, and he even spoke with the head of assassinations for the KGB. The letter that Oswald wrote to the Soviet embassy, which was delivered after his death, further supports this argument that Oswald was, you know, a bona fide Marxist who just loved the Soviet Union and he loved Cuba. On the other hand, for Warren Report critics, Mexico City is an elaborate false flag operation that was done to frame Oswald to make it look like he was working with the Soviets or the Cubans so that the military would have a good reason to invade Cuba or launch a first strike nuclear attack at the Soviet Union. Mexico City also served the purpose of letting insiders in the government in on a little secret that there may have been a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy, But since it was with the Soviets and the Cubans, we need to cover it up so that we can save millions of American lives and stop a nuclear war. Mexico City also provides a good answer to the question of why would so many insiders lie and mislead in the investigation? Well, if they thought that they were saving their country from nuclear apocalypse, but they had to keep it top secret, then there's a pretty good chance that they would. I have a rebuttal to address here on this topic. It's a pretty big one, so let's jump into it. There was no second person impersonating Oswald in Mexico City. Hoover was wrong when he told LBJ that. That is from Andrew in Canada. In support of this claim, Andrew provided a declassified internal HSCA document on the details of Oswald's time in Mexico City. The report says on page 520, quote, "No FBI agent interviewed by the committee recalled listening to any tape recordings purporting to contain a conversation involving Oswald." Now, this document definitely undermines the argument that we can rely on Hoover's claim that there was an Oswald imposter in Mexico City. This citation, by the way, is just about the tapes. It's not about photos. And if this document's true, if the point is true, then Hoover's memos to President Johnson and to Secret Service Chief Rowley were both false. So that would not bode very well for J. Edgar Hoover. I have seen no other documentation around the same time that shows Hoover changing his position from what he told Johnson about the Oswald imposter, which was the same thing of it was in the memo and which was in the same thing in the memo to Rowley. In fact, Hoover's still talking about Oswald's trip to Mexico City, and he's describing it as being a, quote, false story from the CIA in a January 1964 memo. We would think that Hoover would have corrected himself if he realized that there was really no tape all along, but that didn't happen. And remember, we have witnesses that talk about these tapes, okay? So, including Warren Report attorneys, okay? Warren Commission attorneys, rather. So, you know, choose your own adventure. Believe what you want to believe. All I'm trying to do is capture the arguments and the counterpoints. So, again, like, look, guys, you know by now, listening to this show, I can't unknow the things I already know. No matter how objective I want to be, okay? I can't unknow what I already know. But what I can do is state the argument of those who, you know, believe the Warren Report is correct. And I at least want everyone to know what the argument is. And I want to present that argument in good faith. So I'll be talking to some folks with some different perspectives coming up here in the future. But I just want to say, like, my view on debating, I guess, whatever you want to call it, is that I think everyone's going to have to come to their own decision. And I just think the way people make inferences varies, and it just depends on your life experience. And I'm not going to tell you what to believe. I can tell you what I think I believe. I can tell you what I think is reasonable. And I will tell you what the argument is from the other side, whether I agree with it or not. So in conclusion, my bottom line on Mexico City is that, one, Oswald was being impersonated either in Mexico City or in Dallas. I don't know which, but I know that it was made to look like he was in both places at the same time, which cannot be possible. And number two, the CIA lied about the tapes and the photos of Oswald. You can make your own inference as to what that means. And you may take the position that the CIA didn't lie. They were just mistaken and they got confused. That's, you know, look, you want to take that view, go for it. I can't, given all the evidence that we've covered today. The third and final point of my conclusion, Lyndon Johnson lied to Richard Russell and Earl Warren about the nature of Oswald's relationship with the Soviets and the Cubans. That's all for this recap and rebuttals episode. Please join us in the next episode for an interview with an expert on intelligence and the JFK assassination, Dr. John Newman. We'll continue to talk about Mexico City and also cover a few other pieces of the case with Dr. Newman.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.